This podcast is brought to you by Upcase. Improve your development skills by completing coding exercises that are peer-reviewed by real humans. Learn more at upcase.com.
Giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I'm here today with Carl Smith. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
It's going great. So you do a lot of stuff. You're into a lot of things.
I am definitely into a lot of things. That is without a doubt true.
So I don't want to try to summarize you, so maybe you can do it for us.
Sure. Well, let's see. I started EngineWorks, which is now a digital product company. I started that about 11 years ago. It became Self-Aware about a year ago. I am on the board of a new education group called Miros Academy, where they're basically trying to redefine education so that it's more about teamwork and group-oriented goals. I am part of the Bureau with the Gregs from Happy Cog, and we are trying to build community where there isn't community in the web industry. So project managers, operations people, owners, people that don't have all of the events and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of podcasting, man.
Yeah.
Got a podcast called BizCraft and a new one that we're just kicking off soon called Technically Simple. So I'm kind of excited about that one too.
I heard of you through our CEO, Chad, and he said that you are, have like, you're partly known for your crazy heretical work-life balance ideas.
Yeah, you know, I never wanted to be in charge. I didn't want to be the boss. I thought that was a crappy job. You know, everybody says they want to be the boss, but to me it seemed like if you find the right people who truly want autonomy and you give them the right space, then you don't have to be the boss.
And so that's working out for you?
You know, when it works, it's beautiful. And when it doesn't, it is a bloody mess. I mean, when it starts to fall apart, it can be pretty disastrous. But Daniel Pink in his book Drive, he talks about it a lot. He talks about autonomy and mastery and purpose. And I even like to think about Clay Shirky and the idea of collective action on top of that. So even though you know people's dreams are not going to be the same, nobody has my dream. Nobody cares if I achieve my goals but me, right? But if off in the distance, we can say, hey, look, Ben wants to get over here and Carl wants to get over here, we can at least go this far together.
Right.
So through that kind of alignment, you'll find that people can self-manage really well.
So how have you set up EngineWorks then?
Well, so we coined a term called jellyfish model. Actually, Rachel Gertz, one of our engineers at the time out of Vancouver, and I were talking one day about what company did we want to work at. And I told her, I was like, you know what? I want it to be completely transparent. I want it to be just no leadership whatsoever. The idea of flat now I know is a bit of a fallacy. Flat is a lie. But we just started describing all these things we wanted, sustainable, and we wanted it to be adaptable and all these things. And the next day, Rachel called me and she goes, you're talking about jellyfish. And I was like, you're drunk. You're 3 hours behind me and you're drunk. And she said, no, it's a jellyfish are one of the best teams on the planet. They show up when there's a problem. They grow to the size of the need. They clean up the ocean and then they go off. Sometimes they die. We didn't want to die. That wasn't one of the goals.
Yeah.
But so we tried that. And now I actually talk about it as opt-in. When the team sees a project come in, if there is a group that forms around that project, then that project gets accepted. If not, if people don't show up and say, I want to work on this, then that project doesn't come in.
So did you like have like a pitch session where someone says, I want people to do this?
Absolutely. So basically what happens is a group of jellyfish is called a smack.
Okay.
So we have what we call a smack attack. And basically we'll tell a prospect who's coming in, look, the team has to choose to work with you. I know this feels really backwards, but what we need from you is a compelling reason why we're the right fit for you. And the clients who get it, the prospects who get it, really get it. Because I'll explain to them, I'm like, look, do you want to hire a company that's going to force people to do your project? Or do you want to hire a company where people stood up and said, I want that. That's the project I want. And so the amazing thing is, where I had always gone after big corporate clients like Chase and Energizer and even things like Epic Games, it turns out when they were in charge, suddenly we're doing organic foods and we're doing fantasy sports and we're doing things that were passions of theirs that I never thought we could get into.
Yeah.
So it was really beneficial to let them have that say.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool model. And surely the projects turn out better when people are passionate about them. There's just no way to fake that.
Absolutely. And you know, and sometimes, I mean, we derail just like any company. I mean, it's not like it's always perfect. I mean, sure. There are times where we totally screw up. But I think the difference is people own it. Mm. And you can't say, I didn't sign up for this, because you did.
Mm.
And I think that's a big part of it. Everybody kind of rallies around. And we still have, like I was saying, I think the concept of flat is a lie. I really wanted flat to be true. But even at shops like GitHub, or if you look at Valve and you look at what they do, when you really dig into it, there is some level of temporary hierarchy, at least, because we right. need some level of organization to get things done. It's when those hierarchies persist and start to gather dust, that's when the danger happens. Hmm. Because then they just start to defend themselves. People just try to protect their, you know, their status.
A little fiefdom.
Yeah.
So you're into ad hoc hierarchies.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's whoever cares the most should be in charge,
mm.
or whoever has the most pain. I mean, that's another thing at Engine. So right now, Matthew Oliphant, who's one of our guys out of Portland, he's redoing the Engine handbook. And it's a public document on Google, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a Google doc. Anybody can come in and see it anytime, where it's at. They can comment, all these types of things. But Matthew really cared about that.
Mm-hmm.
And he really wanted us to have this understanding of what it was to be at EngineWorks
mm-hmm.
and what it meant. I really didn't care as much, which sounds shitty considering I own the thing, right? Mm-hmm. But I never would have gotten it done. Or if there's something that's a pain point, like tracking time, whoever hates it the most should be in charge of fixing it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I like that.
It just makes sense.
Do you have people that are remote, or is there like a Portland office or...
No, it's pretty much all remote. We're based in Jacksonville, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to shut down that office about 3 years ago so we'd be completely remote,
mm-hmm.
Fully distributed. And the entire team, which at the time was about probably 20 people, rebelled against me and said they wanted that office.
Hmm. They wanted the home base?
They wanted the home base. Well, part of it was a lot of them worked from their homes, right? And I work from my house. I've got this little office that I'm in now, but it's just a 5-minute bike ride from my house if it's too noisy around or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said I wanted to close the main office, one of the people in there said, well, this isn't fair. When I signed up, I had an office, and now you're taking that away.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who work from home said, yeah, if that happens, then one day you might tell us we have to go into an office.
Mm.
So we're fine with spending the $25,000 a year. It's not a lot of money. It's a small space. But we would rather spend that money and know that we're maintaining the integrity of the agreements we've had than take that money and have a trip to Vegas or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But still based in Jacksonville. But we've got people in Portland, Atlanta, Columbia, Missouri, Denver, Fort Lauderdale, New York. I'm not really sure. They actually also go through a process of hiring and firing that's basically team-based. So it's very Lord of the Flies sometimes.
Hmm.
But,
what is that? What does like the hiring process look like then?
So with the hiring process, when you first come on, you're offered to join a team for a project. That team actually goes through and interviews you. So it used to be that I managed all of it, and mm-hmm. I'm not actually doing the work.
Yeah.
I'm not actually able to judge your work. But if the team gets to say yes or no to the individual, it's a huge difference.
Right.
And then the team will also explain basically the salaries that everybody's getting paid.
Hmm.
Right? They'll say, hey, you know what? We're developers. We're generally in the $80,000 to $85,000 a year range. The UX people are in the $85,000 to $90,000 a year range. We've got some project managers that are in the $75,000 to $80,000 a year range. What we pay on the hourly is we would go ahead and pay you $80 an hour for this project. And then if that works out, we'll bring you on for like a 6-month contract,
mm-hmm.
at which point you'll make the equivalent of that salary for your skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an interesting thing. Actually went through and analyzed 30 different shops around the country and what they paid their people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very open with that. And that allowed the team to kind of look at it and decide together based on skill set and the marketplace what they wanted to get. So the onboarding process, the interview process, is a little disarming for some people
mm-hmm.
because they're used to they're going to talk to their boss. Well, the team is your boss.
Yeah.
You know, so keep them happy,
because right.
otherwise they're not going to ask you to come back.
Mm-hmm. That seems like just another implementation of that idea of like the decision should be made as close to the pain or the pleasure as possible.
Exactly.
right? Like, why have the boss say, oh, you're doing a great job, when the team is actually kind of like, it's okay.
Exactly, right? Because I can't go into GitHub and see that stuff. I can't code. I can't draw. You know, I know if something looks nice, I know if something works, but I have no idea what that person did. And that's the other part of having somebody work on a project first. Everything in our world is team-oriented, right, in the web space. So until you actually work with somebody, and not like a one-week interview where you come in, like, we want to see you when you get mad. We want to see you when you screw up. We want to see you when you kick ass. And the only way you can do that is go through a full life cycle of a project.
Totally. Do you have trouble finding people that are willing to jump on like that, like commit to that sort of thing?
You know, it depends on where we are, where Engine is, and the projects that it's taking on. But for the most part, the issues we've had are not finding enough people. But when we do find people, they line up really quickly. I mean, this industry right now, freelance is really hot. So I do a lot of research, talk to a lot of owners. There's a lot of freelance going on. But in the second half of 2014, a lot of shops are hiring again. It's like the beginning of this year, people didn't know what was going to happen, where things were going. It seemed like people were down on revenues, profit was down, but then everything's turned around like recently in the past 3 months, I think. Summer was still a little slow, but it seemed to come out of summer pretty quick. And so they're hiring again. It's kind of a seller's market if you're talent right now.
So can you walk me through a typical day for you? Give me all these like the mundane details, like when you get up, what are you going to eat, where are you biking?
So I get up generally around 6:30, 6:45 in the morning.
After how many hours of sleep?
I generally get 8.
Okay.
I'm like, I'm a Fitbit guy. Over the last year, I've dropped some weight and I've gotten in better shape. And so I really try to get at least 7.5 hours of good sleep, which for me, there's about 30 minutes of tossing and turning. So, so I get up. I've got 3 dogs. So I've got to take care of them. And so while my wife is taking care of getting, I've got 2 daughters, 13 and 11. She's taking care of that, getting them ready. I'm taking care of the dogs, drinking a cup of coffee, and throwing a ball for my youngest puppy, Sherlock, who's a golden retriever. He's just about a year old. I throw that ball probably 30 times for him. And he's just never gonna stop.
Never get tired of that.
Back, never get tired.
Yeah.
And then I'll either be driving my kids into school. That's one of the things I love to do. If that's not happening that day, then I go sit down and probably check in around 8 or 8:30, log into HipChat. That's what Engine uses to stay connected. And I'll see a couple of people there and we'll just shoot the shit a little bit, talk about what we did that night, talk about what's on our plate for that day. And then I'll start writing. Normally, once I see that nobody needs me at Engine, and I'll also check in at HappyCog, check in at the Bureau on their Slack channel. Once I see that nobody really needs me, I'll dive into writing. So I'll spend a good hour or two in the morning writing. If it's a blog post or it's journaling for me, whatever it is, I just find that the more I can get ideas out in the morning before things show up, the better they are. I'll take a good hour and a half in the middle of the day, generally go for a run, which is stupid here in Florida to run in the middle of the day. But I find that it's I'm just about to start feeling stressed to do something, and that's what triggers my run.
And have you checked email at this point?
I'll check email probably when I check into HipChat, so like right around 8:30. One thing I don't do, when I first wake up, I generally don't sleep with my phone or my computer in the bedroom. I try, like 30 minutes before I go to bed, I try not to look at bright lights.
Same. It
restricts a lot of the ability to go to sleep. But then once I check in to see if anybody needs me, which like I said, it's probably about 2 hours after I've gotten up, that's when I'll check email too. Generally going to be 15 or 20 in there, a lot less than it used to be when I was in charge of everything. I was in charge of everything. I would get like 200 legitimate emails a day. Like that needed me. I had a rule that if somebody carbon copied me on something, it went to a folder. And I used to tell people, if it's not to me, it's not to me. I can't, I don't have time to see what you're saying to somebody else. But anyway, and then I'll probably go for that run, come home, clean up, grab some lunch, ride my bike into the this little office that I've got up here. Most of the time, I'll actually bring Sherlock up here with me. He's not up here today. And just hang out. I've got whiteboards on the walls, and I'll just keep brainstorming. I'll leave all of my channels open, so if anybody needs me. And generally, I'll check in. I'll help out with new biz with Engine. They'll have something that came in that they want some help with. And a lot of my time I'll spend on the Bureau. Like I do a podcast for the Bureau called DPM Radio, where I'll interview digital project managers and find out about them. And then a lot of research. I do a lot of research in the industry around shops and owners and just where things are going. I was never happy with the information I would get from AIGA or Glassdoor or any of these types of companies.
So why are you gathering that information?
Really for my own information and also to educate the industry. One of the things is because we don't talk to each other as much, sometimes it can be really hard to make good decisions. If you look at AIGA, and I love AIGA.
What is that?
American Institute of Graphic Artists.
Okay.
So they do a salary survey where they talk about what a web designer should make. Well, when they do that survey, they actually talk to Amazon as well as talking to a shop like EngineWorks,
right,
or a company like Thoughtbot, right? And the same thing happens with developers, right? They're groups that put together, like I think it's Robert Half International or some of these groups. Well, they have a vested interest to have those salaries as high as possible because they're trying to get people to pay their dues, to do their things. But if you're looking at the service industry versus the product industry, totally different. It's not fair. Like I had a friend who came out of Facebook and he told me, he was like, look, I just want a simple service side job making like $230,000, $240,000 a year, nothing extra. And I was like, dude, you got to stay product side. And you know what? He went on to Pinterest and he's very happy and, you know, he got what he wanted.
Yes.
But the thing was, I couldn't make good decisions based on the information I had. And one of my core values is just about fairness, right? Like I've always been the best when I knew that there was a sense of equality and fairness. And without that information, I didn't know if I was being fair to the people that were working with me. And it kind of gets back to Daniel Pink. You know, he talks about intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. Well, if I can show everybody this is what the service industry is paying right now, then they can know that, you know, they're being fairly compensated and they can focus on the work. Even with all of those recruiters on LinkedIn offering them, I'm sure, significantly more than Engine's capable of, but they have to go work at Apple or they have to go work at Google and pretty much sign away a lot of their life.
Right, totally. So, I think people can make that own distinction too. Like, you know that there's more money over here, but there's so much more than that.
Yeah, I mean, if you get to choose the work you're doing and you get to choose the team, it's kind of sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the remote flexibility and, you know, the culture that you like and the people that you're into and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. You've mentioned the Bureau a couple times. Can you talk a little bit more about what that is?
Sure. So it's the Bureau of Digital Affairs. And I got to know Greg Story and Greg Hoy through a camp they were putting on. I almost said a conference. It's not a conference. It's an event. But it was called Owner Camp. And the first one, I think there were about 15 of us. And we got together just as owners to talk. And we didn't really know what it was at first. A lot of us thought Happy Cog was collecting us in a room and then they were going to gas us like the Joker in a Batman film and laugh hysterically. But what it turned out was we just started talking about issues that we all faced and we didn't have anybody to talk with about it. And as I got to know Greg and Greg, or the Gregs as they're known collectively, we started talking about making Owner Camp something bigger. And they were working on something called the Digital PM Summit. And at the first one, at the first Digital PM Summit, they had about 150 digital PMs show up and they had never met before. Nobody put on an event for them. And as soon as that event was over, we started seeing meetups spring up around North America. There were quite a few in Canada. There were a ton in the States. And we took a sense of pride and accomplishment, especially Brett Harned, who was way behind it, in that we were starting to create this community, and that became the Bureau's mission, is basically through education and events to create community. So a lot of the research I'm doing is also in order to be able to educate the industry on what's going on. And best practices for owners, we've never had that.
Yeah. It's so powerful when you can talk to someone that does what you do, but somewhere else. It's like, it's awesome. It's the best.
And when you find out that they don't know what they're doing either.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true. Definitely. Or like, and also just to see like, oh, you have the same problem. That makes me feel better. Or like, oh, you have a problem with this thing that we mastered. And that makes me feel good, like that we at least do this and we don't have your problem there. That's nice.
And we've been lucky to have companies like Zurb and Tihan Lax. And I'm trying to think of some shops that were Lullabot, right? We've had these different types of shops, Seer, which is an SEO firm. All different angles from the industry have come together. And we've got 14 events we're planning next year.
Oh wow!
So yeah, it's getting kind of busy.
Hmm. So how much time does Engine take from you versus your other pursuits?
Well, it really depends on what's going on with them. So my title at EngineWorks is the advisor.
Yeah.
And what that means is, depending on what they're going through, it could be that I've got 25 hours in a week that's mm-hmm. going to Engine. But when things are going smooth, like, and over the past year, with the exception of maybe like 5 or 6 weeks, things have been pretty smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10 hours. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of that is more me checking in than it is them checking in with me.
Mm.
So it's been really smooth. Yeah. But like this week, because there's a lot of new business activity and they're a little overloaded, I'll probably put in a good 15 or 20 hours with them.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. It's interesting. You typically think of a consultancy as being a kind of thing that you never really step away from. It needs constant attention and feeding and all that. But it sounds like you've at least got, you're like part of the way there.
I'm part of the way there. You know, so last September was when I stepped away, and I would say for 10 months I was there. I mean, there were some times where I might put in 2 hours a week.
Hmm.
And it was very much just a, hey, how's everybody doing? And everybody was like, hey, good to see you. And a couple of people going, who was that?
You know,
'cause they didn't, no clue. But it ebbs and flows. And you know what? I think that's the way it should be. Just because you start something, I don't think you should be tethered to it.
Mm.
And I think the idea that the only way out is to give it away is kind of silly. But I've had other owners of businesses approach me and say, you know, it's not a new idea to start something and not run it. And I'm like, yeah, but in our industry, none of us went to business school, you know?
Yeah.
We were designers, or we were developers,
right,
or may have been writers. And so for us, it's just like, but this is a labor of love.
Mm. And it's amazing how much being the artisan yourself colors the way you behave when you run a business that employs those artisans. Like, you just think Absolutely. Of it a whole different way.
Yeah. And so I, you know, my background was, before starting EngineWorks, I worked at a full service advertising agency
mm-hmm.
where by the end of it, I had collected titles like merit badges. I was the head of media, of account service, of, at the time, back in the old days, we called it technology.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was another one in there that I can't remember now, but I was good at organizing people. And I was okay at strategy. I wasn't great at strategy. There were other people much better than me. But it was a good assessment of talent and chemistry.
Mm.
And so I think that's part of what's happened at Engine is I've been able to keep that feeling of that person would really be good here. Or maybe I should send that person over to a competitor. Let them disrupt over there. I'm kidding. I wouldn't do that.
Do you think that is that your superpower?
I like to think so. I think I'm a bit of a... You know, nothing really upsets me except when people are disrespectful to each other.
Mm.
So I'd say my superpower is being able to kind of stay calm and get along with a lot of people.
Mm.
Not in a fake way. Like, I'm genuinely interested to understand people's stories. Like Ben, I'm sitting there going, okay, he's got the voice. How did he end up on that side of the microphone? Because at ThoughtBot, you know, I'm familiar with that type of work. And I can appreciate that they're thinking, you know, this podcast is going to be... And I'm not going to turn the interview on you, but I'm just like, that's one of the things for me. It's like, what is your story? Like, how did you end up over there?
Yeah, I just got pitched on it, actually. We hired somebody who had gone to Berklee School of Music and had an audio engineering background. And he was like, hey, we should have a podcast. And Chad was like, yeah, we should. And he asked me if I wanted to host it. And my first reaction was like, nah, sounds kind of bad. Like, inviting guests and editing things and all that. And he's like, oh, no, you don't have to do any of that. You just have to, like, actually host it. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, right. I'm into that. That sounds good.
Well, see, that's perfect. That's a great story.
Hmm. So you mentioned earlier, if you can find someone whose dreams are sort of aligned with yours for a while, then, you know, you can sort of work together and you both are getting what you want.
Right.
So what are your dreams then?
You know, I originally would have said my dream was to have a self-sustaining company. And I think that's kind of there now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, when I think about the future, all I really think about is, you know, how can I give my kids what it is they want and get them where they want to be? I'm hardly a selfless person. There are things that I want in this world. But when I really sit back and just concentrate, like, my oldest daughter's 13 and she's got a shot at being some level of professional dancer, right? Ballet could be a play for her.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest daughter is like, loves Minecraft and really doesn't want to do extracurricular stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? She's great at theater. And So I just think about my dad told me, you know, my brother and sister were both really high into academics, like super amazingly smart. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, if you don't want to go to college, it's fine. And he would support me for 4 years. So right now, when I think about the future, I'm just thinking about I've got 5 years and 7 years before they're out there. And I just want to make sure I'm able to take care of them. So yeah. I don't know if that sounds too sappy, but that's truly what my dream is right now, is just to make sure they're okay.
Yeah. So how do you organize all the stuff you're doing? I see you have whiteboards with stuff on them behind you. Do you have other like systems?
Not really. You know, I've got a to-do list, and I just categorize things in one of three categories. Mm. And it's small, medium, and large. Mm-hmm. And I just try to grab one large thing every day and then a medium and a couple of smalls and just throw them up there based on what seems most important.
Yeah.
I used to have a super detailed to-do list, and then I found it was too stressful, and so I threw it away.
Yeah.
And the important stuff came back.
Right. I've had the same experience with to-do lists. I always want to change the software I'm using. Like, oh, no, I'm going to use this system is wrong. It needs to be like this. And it's not really about the system. It's more about the habits around it. Like, I find myself, like, things pile up, or, like, it gets to the point where it's stressful to look at a certain category or something like that. And actually what I need is, like, mental modes and like, personal habits around to-dos that are different, yeah. not a different system.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know what? The thing about a to-do list is our lives change and our priorities change, mm-hmm. but we keep some of those old things on that list.
Yeah.
Right? When time and money don't matter, right? Like, what would you do?
Right, sure.
That should be at the top of your list, right? And it sounds like an easy question, but it's a real tough question, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so easy to just keep doing the things that are in front of you and not thinking like the slightly higher level or way higher level.
Like, urgent versus important, all those things we've heard 1,000 times.
Yeah, totally. Hmm. So what are some of your favorite things?
Just in general, I mean, I love running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things for me that is my meditation.
Mm-hmm. Do you listen to podcasts or anything while you're doing it?
I don't. I used to try to train for things and all this kind of stuff. Now I just realized I like to not even know how far I'm going. Mm. I'll just look and see how much time I have, and I'll just run for that amount of time. And where I live, we're just down from the river, and we've got a lot of canopy roads, old oak trees. So it really, even though I'm running on asphalt, it really does feel like a bit of a connection. And so running is just crazy important for me. I just love it. I do love podcasting. Mm-hmm. Interviewing people is just super fun. And when you find out, you get them into that place they weren't expecting.
Yeah,
and
totally.
You can tell that, oh my God, they're unveiling here something they didn't even tell themselves, you know? So podcasting is crazy fun for me. And you know what? I'm a traditional football loving type person too. So I'm excited it's football season, even though, you know, I'm a Jaguars fan. You know, it's like you can't choose who you love, man. Mm-hmm. They choose you. And so it's a lot of fun for me, just college basketball and any flavor of football whatsoever.
Gotcha.
I get way into.
Hmm. So what haven't I asked you that I should?
What haven't you asked me that you should? You're good, man. You're good. You ask all the questions.
this is episode 115 or something.
115. You're pretty good at it.
Decent number of chances at this.
You know, I'll tell you that one of the things I would say is like everything sounds like wine and roses, right? Everything I'm talking about sounds like I got it all figured out.
Yeah.
What's the thing keeping me up at night? What's the thing that's really under the surface of all this calm smiles and giggles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Oh, you want me to talk about that?
Yeah.
You're crazy. You know what? I think the thing that does wake me up is this sense that maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Mm.
You know, I learned early on, my mom taught me, she was like, trust people until they give you a reason not to.
Yep.
And a lot of people show up, don't trust anybody until they give you a reason to. And there are times where you wake up and you go, you know what? I gave that person a lot of space, or I let that continue down that path, and I'm worried that it's going to wreck and it's going to come in and it's going to impact my family somehow.
Hmm.
And to date, it hasn't happened. You know, I've had a few things, especially when we're trying to get this autonomous model off the ground. There were people who took advantage and I let them, you know, I didn't step in soon enough. And when something like that happens and you see how it impacts, a good mentor of mine, actually, Melanie Husk, who I worked for, the only boss I ever had, she once told me that when bad people stay, good people leave.
Yeah.
And there's this sense that sometimes you'll be watching a team and you're like, I'm not sure that that's the right person, and you have to let it go. And so those things wake me up at night sometimes. It's like, should I step in? If I step in, do I start to unravel everything that we've worked for here? And so that's it. You know, I actually feel like I may have stepped in too heavy over the past several weeks, because they had a huge project that ended a little quicker than they expected. They had money in the bank. They had concerns over new business, and they asked if I would help with that, because they never were a business generating organization. So I'd say that's, you know, that's the thing that worries me, is sometimes I think maybe I'm just have no clue what I'm doing. You know, it's imposter syndrome. I was a theater major, you know, and I'm running this multimillion-dollar company, or I own it. I'm not running it. Right.
Yeah.
So I would say that's kind of the thing.
Yeah. Well, the good news is you're so not alone with that.
No, I'm not.
I think I get the sense from pretty much everybody I talk to that we're all sort of just doing our best and faking it as best we can and hoping for the best.
Yeah, fake it till you make it. That's what they used to say all the time.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Yeah. Well, I think that's actually a great place to stop.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. Like I said, I've been a ThoughtBot fan for a long time, and it's exciting to be a part of it.
Thank you. It was really great to talk to you. I enjoyed it. So do you have anything you want to share with people, or something that they can check out or get in touch with you or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I was going to say that might be beneficial to your listeners, and definitely beneficial to me, is we have a QA service called QCAT, and it's QCAT. And if you go to QCATpro.com, you can find out about having somebody else do the QA that you just don't want to do on digital products.
Gotcha. Okay, awesome. Today's show was produced and edited by Tom Obarski. If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/giantrobots/116. Thanks for listening.